Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're broadcasting today again live from New Orleans, Louisiana, here on the campus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. I've been here for the last several days for the meetings of the Evangelical Theological Society. It's been a good meeting. A lot of good kind of conferencing going on here. A lot of academic papers discussed, very high level of good theological scholarship. It's encouraging to see all the young people who are here, young scholars developing in service to the church. That's just a very encouraging thing to see. It has been good to be here in New Orleans, one of the great cities of America. Of course, a city that was largely devastated 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years ago, with Hurricane Katrina. It's good to be back and see the city doing well. Still a lot of evidence. I just was, as I was driving over here to the campus, seeing a church with a steeple with the cross bent over, obviously by the wind, with largely, about half the ceiling, roof tiles gone. And there are big office towers still with gaping holes with the windows glass broken and gone. But there in the French Quarter and where tourists are near the convention centers, it has really come back. And the spirit of the city seems to be back as well. This is one of the great mission fields of North America. And if you're just kind of interested in seeing the parade of worldviews and belief systems, let me tell you, it's on parade in New Orleans. And that'll give you plenty to think about, plenty to pray about when you come here. And it has been an interesting place for the Evangelical Theological Society to be. I think the city of New Orleans is trying to figure out what we're all about. And there are a lot of evangelical theologians trying to figure out what New Orleans is all about. Today was a landmark day, and I want to tell you why. In Washington, D.C. today, a statement was released known as the Manhattan Declaration. It's a statement on marriage, on the sanctity of human life, and on religious liberty. There have been a lot of statements that have been released, all kinds of signatories, press conferences held. This press conference was held today at the National Press Club. And I am one of the original signatories to this document. I don't sign this kind of document. I haven't heretofore signed, so far as I can remember, any document like this. I did sign this one, and I'm going to tell you on the program today why. It is out of a sense of integrity and urgency that I signed this declaration. I was in New York City just a few weeks ago for the kind of unveiling of this movement, of this statement. I had the opportunity to deliver the keynote address to a meeting of religious leaders from across the United States and indeed around the world, an interesting group, the kind of group that, the very existence of such a group demands some kind of explanation. There in the room were leaders from the Roman Catholic Church, from Eastern Orthodoxy, and from Protestant Evangelicalism. And we were there discussing a sense of crisis. The sense of crisis is what united us in that room for a conversation and now for a public declaration. Why I signed this document? Well, I'll tell you, it is because I share the urgency. I'll tell you why. I share the analysis that is offered in this statement about that urgency. I share the sense, a very clear convictional sense, that this is about more than marriage, the sanctity of human life, and religious liberty. It's about our ability eventually to even have the freedom of the pulpit to speak the truth concerning what God has revealed in His Word about marriage, the sanctity of human life, and the reality of religious liberty, not just as some gift of a government, but as the recognition that that's what fits the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God. Those of you who listen to me on this program and have known me for a long time know that I will never be anything less than clear, as God gives me the ability to be clear about where I believe the Roman Catholic Church falls short in terms of biblical Christianity. You Google my name and put in Roman Catholic Church and you'll discover that I've said some very, very clear things, because I do believe, that the Roman Catholic Church and evangelicals do not share a common understanding of the gospel. And I do believe that is the most important thing that, that shapes and characterizes the identity of the Christian Church. And when we come to add Eastern Orthodoxy, very similarly, we would share a belief in the Trinity. I'm very thankful for, the fact we share a basic, a very clear understanding, the full deity and full humanity of Jesus Christ. But the most urgent question for us is to answer the question, how can I be saved? And that is where we find dramatic differences. I cannot compromise those differences. I cannot cross confessions to sign a statement that is theologically ambiguous, troublesome, and complex. I sign this statement because it zeroes in on those issues of marriage, the sanctity of human life, and religious liberty. And on those issues, yes, I'll stand together. I will stand and say we disagree on the fundamental definition of what it means to be a Christian, but we stand together understanding that our ability to have the freedom to articulate what we are certain the Bible says about marriage and the sanctity of human life, that's at risk if we do not stand together to make this declaration very, very clear. There's a sense of urgency. In fact, you could define it as a sense of an emergency that drew us to that room and draws us to this statement. I'll be talking about it. You can find that statement, by the way, as you're preparing for this conversation by going to the website. It's manhattandeclaration.org. If you're following my Twitter feed, you've been receiving material about it through the day. If you're not, well, you ought to go sign up. That's Twitter/Albert Moeller, all one word. And there you will find that during the day I try to keep you abreast of what's going on. And, of course, tell you also what we're going to be talking about on this program and what kind of difference it ought to make. We're going to get to that conversation in just a moment. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. When we come back, I'll give you some more extended introduction to what the statement's all about, who signed it, why, who was there in Washington, D.C., why it matters. We'll get to that in just a moment. At my website at albertmoeller.com today, I posted an article very early in the morning entitled "The Blur of Gender is the New York Times Trying to Tell Us Something." Let me tell you what in the world's going on there. You have to wonder. I hold in my hands two different front page stories from the style section of the New York Times. And this, by the way, gets to some of the very heart issues that we were dealing with the Manhattan Declaration. About the confusion over the gift of gender and over the reality of marriage and all the rest. Well, let me tell you, here is the Sunday, November 8 cover story. I wrote about it. We talked about it here on the website. That was the headline story, "Can a Boy Wear a Skirt to School?" subtitled, "When Gender Bends the Dress Code, High School Struggle to Respond." And then Thursday. When was Thursday? That means yesterday. The New York Times, 11 days later, is out with a similar cover story, front page of the style section. Here's the headline. It's all a blur to them. The subhead, "Crossing between men's and women's aisles feels right to young customers today." Okay, so in the span of 11 days, the New York Times has given front page of the style section prominence to two different stories about young people crossing the gender line. You think the New York Times is trying to make a point here? Well, I think that's pretty unavoidable. And it just gets more complex and interesting when you actually look at the two stories. Now, we talked about the story last week by Jan Hoffman, the "Can a Boy Wear a Skirt to School?" story. And you may remember that as we talked about it, there was a certain specialist authority that was called in to speak about that issue. Her name is Diane Ehrensoft, an Oakland psychologist. Now, here's what's really interesting. I want you to hear what she said. Now, this is with a different reporter than in the story that appeared yesterday. Diane Ehrensoft said in the first story, quote, "This generation is really challenging the gender norms we grew up with. A lot of youths say they won't be bound by boys having to wear this or girls wearing that. For them, gender is a creative playing field," end quote. Now, in the story that appeared yesterday, a story by reporter Ruth LaFerla, well, it turns out that the same authority is back. Not only is this about the same subject, just with a slightly older generational cohort, the first one about teenagers, this one about young adults and 20-somethings. Now this reporter comes back, and guess what? She goes to the same authority, and the authority says the very same thing. The New York Times published virtually identical quotes from the same authority in two different front-page style section articles in 11 days. That leads me to wonder if anyone's editing the style section of the New York Times. But listen, here's what Diane Ehrensoft said. Remember, this is the first article. She said, "This generation is really challenging the gender norms we grew up with. A lot of youth say they won't be bound by boys having to wear this or girls wearing that. For them, gender is a creative playing field." Now she's back saying, quote, "Younger people no longer accept the standard boxes. They won't be bound by boys having to wear this or girls wearing that." I think there's a peer culture in which that kind of gender blurring is not only acceptable but cool, end quote. You know, that's just odd. It's odd, as a matter of fact, in the extreme. And the arguments are very, very similar, but in this case, rather than dealing with teenagers who are wearing, boys wearing makeup and skirts to school, it goes to people like Brandon Daly, a 26-year-old hairstylist in Manhattan. He says he hadn't yet worn a skirt, but he expresses his experimentation by wearing, quote, a long drapey shirt with really tight pants. My generation is more outside the box than the generation before me, he advises. By the way, reporter Ruth LaFerla is here pointing to this as a trend in, well, the more upscale fashion outlets in America, dealing with especially marketing of clothing to young adults. Is this a trend? Well, it might be. Both of these stories are obviously dealing with a reality. Is it a reality coast to coast? Well, perhaps increasingly so, but I think never before, as perhaps in my experience, the New York Times shown that it is really focused on issues it just can't let go. Two stories in 11 days about gender-bending young people with the same authority tells you something not only about the trend, but about the newspaper. We'll be right back to talk about the Manhattan Declaration and why it matters on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We are here in New Orleans, Louisiana, broadcasting live today. In Washington, D.C., a press conference was held at the National Press Club this afternoon in which a declaration, a statement was released. That statement is known as the Manhattan Declaration, and you can find it by going to the website at manhattandeclaration.org. It's a very important statement. Those who were there at the press conference spoke to the historic importance of what is going on there. They spoke to, indeed, why the document was released and how it came about. It really focuses on three very important issues: human life, marriage, and religious liberty. And it might be just helpful for you to have something of a knowledge of the shakedown here about how it comes together. Human life is the first point. And it states very clearly that the lives of the unborn, the disabled, and the elderly are now threatened. And it celebrates that public opinion has moved in a pro-life direction, but also recognizes that powerful and determined forces are working to expand abortion, embryo-destructive research, assisted suicide, and euthanasia. Now, the people that signed this document included Protestant evangelicals, Roman Catholic leaders, Eastern Orthodox leaders. That's an unusual group to get together. And when you get a group like that together, there's always a danger that there is theological compromise in the room, in order to get people in the room. And the good thing about this, in my view, is that there was none of that. Instead, we came together to say why we have come to this room boils down to this. We believe that every single human life is sacred at every point of development, and we believe that all human life is now under threat. We believe that marriage is the central institution of human civilization and well-being, not only of reproduction, but the very foundation of the family itself. The DNA of civilization, as I call it, we believe that it is being subverted and that we must take a stand in order to make clear that we will not bend the knee to those who would destroy marriage, regardless of whatever authority they may claim. And then religious liberty. We want to make very clear that freedom of religion and rights of conscience are gravely jeopardized. The Manhattan Declaration is almost 5,000 words, over 4,700 words. At the press conference there at the National Press Club, there were leaders including Robert P. George, professor at Princeton University, frequent guest on this program, just a wonderful intellectual who brings a great deal of insight and wisdom to any conversation about these issues of ultimate importance, Dr. Timothy George, dean of the Beeson Divinity School in Birmingham, Alabama, and Chuck Colson, the founder of Prison Ministries and Prison Fellowship Ministries, and now very much known for his continuing work in the nurture of the Christian worldview. And that was an unusual triumvirate right there. And quite frankly, they've worked on different projects in the past, but this was not just three. This was a larger group. They were the drafters, but a larger group of over 100 Christian leaders met. And then just a few weeks ago, went through this line by line, offered suggestions. I have to tell you, it was good to have been there. I was in that room. As a matter of fact, I had the honor of addressing, giving the keynote address at the end of that process. And I was glad to be in that room because it really did turn out to be what I hoped it would be. And I'm going to be very honest here. The theme of this program is not just about this document and why it matters, but it's very personal for me because I'm telling you that I signed it. And I want you to know why I signed it. I signed it because I believe its assessment of the emergency is correct. I think it's a statement of the Christian understanding of the sanctity of human life and of marriage and of religious liberty is quintessential. I think it's just that good. I think you had just a tremendous amount of wisdom based upon Christian truth and the Christian tradition to come back and say, we want to be very clear in public about why these issues are important to us as we claim Christian identity, not just as we claim American citizenship, but as we claim a Christian identity. And we name ourselves in the Christian faith. This is what really concerns us. Now, there are those who will come back and say, well, how can evangelicals sign that when evangelicals and Roman Catholics have very different understandings of Christianity? And then you throw in the Eastern Orthodox, it just gets now triply complex. And that's absolutely true. And had this statement tried to define justification or the gospel or any number of other theological issues, it would never have worked. Or at least it would never have worked in such a way that I could have signed it. But I did sign it because it did not attempt to do those things. Instead, it said, we're coming in the room as who we are. And when we get in the room, we're going to be really clear as we look at each other honestly in the face to say, we're going to take a stand on these issues. I love the language of the document saying that we will not bend the knee to any who would seek to coerce us, force us to participate in anything that would diminish the sanctity of human life, that would diminish the sanctity of marriage. And by the way, this statement has beautiful language. It's stating again that there is no right to claim that something that is not marriage is marriage and should be culturally and legally recognized as marriage. Is that about same-sex marriage? Of course it is, but it's about more than that as well. It also gets to the issue of religious liberty. The threat to these fundamental principles of justice, says the document, is evident in efforts to weaken or eliminate conscience protections for healthcare institutions and professionals. We've talked about that a great deal on this program. In anti-discrimination statutes that are used as weapons to force religious institutions, charities, businesses, and service providers either to accept and even facilitate activities and relationships they judge to be immoral or to go out of business. So let's talk about what's going on there. Catholic Charities Massachusetts went out of business in terms of adoption because the state of Massachusetts said you can't discriminate. You're going to have to give babies to homosexual couples on the same basis you would give them to heterosexual couples. You cannot discriminate. Therefore, they went out of business. A venerable adoption agency that served the cause of children. And you can look at that if you're an evangelical or perhaps you're Eastern Orthodox and say, well, that was a Catholic institution. That's a Catholic problem. No, it's not. The same laws would apply to any Christian institution, regardless of its confessional tradition. That's why this statement is different. It's because in the eyes of the law, in the eyes of the culture, we are together on these issues. Or we'll find ourselves together silenced on these issues. And there are people who say, well, you can't silence the pulpit. Well, you'll just wait. You just wait. This statement is intended to be a wake-up call to the Christian community and a public statement to the larger culture about the fact that these are real and present dangers. The statement says attacks on religious liberty and dire threats not only to individuals but also to the institutions of civil society, including families, charities, and religious communities. These are threats that are now unquestionable. I speak as president of a theological seminary and as a college. I speak as a denominational leader in the Southern Baptist Convention. I speak as a pastor of a church. I mean, every one of these organizations at every level is just hiring. Every one of these organizations has a public responsibility. Every one of these organizations and institutions. And yes, even your local church, your local congregation, you have legal entanglements that could be used to strangle the witness of your church or your Christian institution if the logic of these anti-discrimination laws and the elimination of conscience protections and these things go on and continue. I love this language. It's very bold. Therefore, let it be known that we will not comply with any edict that compels us or the institutions we lead to participate in or facilitate abortions, etc. We will not bend to any rule forcing us to bless immoral sexual partnerships, treat them as marriages or the equivalent. We will not be intimidated into silence or acquiescence or the violation of our consciences by any power on earth, be it cultural or political, regardless of the consequences to ourselves. Listen to this line. We will fully and ungrudgingly render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, but under no circumstances will we render unto Caesar what is God's. You want to ask a question about this? Want to pose your own issue? Well, give me a call. 877-893-8255. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about the Manhattan Declaration released today at a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. You can find the document at its own website, ManhattanDeclaration.org. I'll be publishing an article that will be released Monday morning entitled Why I Signed the Manhattan Declaration. You will find that article on the website early on Monday. And in the meantime, you can read the declaration. And urgently, we're having this conversation today because I believe the issues addressed by this declaration are urgent. That's why I signed it. And that's why I believe it's important that you should know about it. I would really encourage you to go to the website and just look at it. And I think the language for Christians should be immediately compelling in terms of understanding what's going on. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You may have a question about this. You may have a question that that leads you to want to wonder, would you or would you not have signed this document? Do you or do you not sense this kind of urgency? Well, let's talk about it. 877-893-8255. We're also glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. And then, of course, various social media, Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program, and at Twitter, /AlbertMohler or /MohlerRadio. We got some good stuff already coming in. Derek wrote in, and I found this very, very interesting. Derek wrote in, he says, I'm a Christian. Why do Christians want to legislate marriage? I'm reading from a statement here. He said, marriage is a holy, sacred union that God instituted, and that has nothing, you put nothing in caps, to do with government. I understand the need for the legal contracts between spouses, but why not have that and get government out of defining what marriage is? Isn't that religion's job? End quote. Well, you know, Derek, that's not a stupid question. And it's not an uncommon question. So let's just consider it for a moment. You say that marriage is a sacred union that God instituted. Well, absolutely. You know, no question about it. You just hit the center of the target on that one. And then you say it has nothing to do with government. Well, oh, that's the problem. It does have something to do with government. And by the way, God also instituted government. And so even as God instituted marriage, he also instituted government. By the way, that doesn't necessarily answer your question, but it does make clear that God knew we needed both. And both are a remedy for sin, and both are necessary for human happiness. Both are a reflection of God's intention for us, and recognizing the proper role of both is what is required for us to glorify God most accurately and faithfully. So, Derek, not a stupid question, not an irrelevant question, not an untimely question, because I'm getting this from a lot of people. But let's just think about it for a moment. The suggestion here is that you can take marriage and government and say that they have nothing to do with each other other than just a contract between spouses. But then again, you know, boy, the devil's in the details. Who's going to be defined as a spouse? Marriage, natural marriage, heterosexual marriage, or now if it's same-sex marriage, let's get the church out of the business, as if, by the way, the church is the only one that has an interest in this, the Christian tradition. Let's get Christian voices out of this. Well, then you're still going, you know, polygamy. You know, in other words, you're still going to have some moral judgment about what marriage is and marriage is not. And even though it is a legal issue, you know, Derek, there's just no way out of the fact it's also a moral judgment that's being made there. There's a moral judgment against polygamy. It wasn't a matter of math that people didn't like the fact it was more than two. It was the fact that people considered it to be an immoral misconstrual of marriage and thus injurious to society. The other problem for getting the church out of it, so to speak, is this. We can't. You just can't get away from it. Because the church doesn't exist on a different plane. In this sinful world, we are thrown in together. Now, Christians can really mess this up, Derek, and you know, behind your question's a very legitimate concern, because sometimes, maybe more than sometimes, maybe a lot of the time, Christians look to government to deliver more than government can. And as an evangelical Christian, I'm going to look at this more in a different way, in a way that's more radical, perhaps, than some of the other signatories to this document. For instance, I want to make clear the gospel is not the government's work. The government can't do gospel work. The church is not the government's work, and the government needs to stay out of that. On the other hand, the government is responsible to respect the role of the church, and in particular, you know, evangelical Christians need to realize religious liberty is something we take for granted as we write on our blogs and talk on the air. It's something that can be taken away, tragically so, by despotic government. And by the way, on the issue of marriage, that's where the issue, again, it can't be separated. Because, you know, right now there are churches that are told in some jurisdictions, look, you can discriminate and only have heterosexually married clergy or heterosexual clergy, but, you know, when it comes to hiring support staff for your church, you can't discriminate. An absolute non-discrimination clause. So every church is going to have to decide, you know, what it recognizes marriage to be or not to be. But when the government goes in a different direction, Derek, it makes it much more difficult, indeed, much more difficult for your church. Indeed, it can make it almost impossible for you to say, when we're hiring even support staff, we know what marriage is. And the government says, no, you don't. We do. We'll be right back with more. The phone number, 877-893-8255.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're discussing what took place in Washington, D.C. today at the National Press Club, the unveiling, the release of what is known as the Manhattan Declaration, a statement of Christian leaders drawn from very different communities. From very different churches that gather together to say, in spite of all of our differences across the board on so many issues, we do know what the sanctity of life is all about. We do know why it's urgently important. We know what marriage is, and we recognize that it is now threatened. We understand how important religious liberty is, and we're going to take a stand for it. That document was signed by about 125 original signatories. By the way, you can find those signatures and the identification of those persons at the website at ManhattanDeclaration.org. And you can also find a good deal of other material. You'll find the full 4,700-plus word statement, which I would really commend to you for your reading. You know, for a lot of people, it'll be an education on these issues. And for others, it'll be a good affirmation of how perhaps quintessentially, most clearly, these issues might be stated. There also will be a debate about this, and that's good, too. There's a debate that ought to be had about this, and I'd love to hear from you as you have the opportunity. Write me at mail@albertmohler.com, and as always, we're ready to hear from you by social media and by all other means as well. Let's go to Amanda calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Amanda.
Hello, Dr. Mohler. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the fact that you did sign the declaration because, I mean, we need people like you that are going to help to define the lines, the moral lines in society when so often we're just so confused about it. And again, like I said, I just wanted to express appreciation for you taking a stance on this.
Well, Amanda, that's a very kind call, and I appreciate it. And the motivation that you ascribe there is exactly what I believe my motivation to be, and that is to be clear on this issue, to take a public stand and to stand with others to say we really believe that if we get this wrong, it's going to bring grave injury to human beings. And when I gave my address, by the way, in New York, I spoke about marriage in the gospel, Amanda, and I genuinely believe that marriage is a gospel issue. And after all, it's the central metaphor, the picture between the relationship between Christ and the church. When society messes marriage up, it actually makes it more difficult for people even to understand what the gospel is. And doesn't mitigate for a moment, diminish our evangelistic responsibility, but it does make our apologetic challenge to define the faith all the more difficult. You know, Amanda, there's something else, and your call allows me to say this, and I'm just going to say it straightforwardly. There are people who will not sign this statement because they don't believe these things, which is to say there are some who are heading Christian organizations, the presidents of universities and seminaries and other things who will not sign this document because they don't believe it. They're not with us on the issue of the sanctity of human life and marriage and religious liberty, and they have already bit the knee. And I'll tell you, this statement is going to make that clear, both by who does sign it and who doesn't. At the same time, I'm going to say there will be some who will not sign this statement because they don't sign statements outside of their own confession of faith. And I respect that, too. And as a matter of fact, that's my instinct, and that's the reason why I don't sign these statements. I signed this one because it doesn't require me to compromise that to any degree. And I recognize the integrity of those who will not sign it for that reason, but they're going to stand with us on this issue, and I'm really thankful they're going to stand with us. They also will not bend the knee, And I'm very thankful for that. But I think this statement will also aid them in helping to define this issue. And Amanda, how sad it is that there are so many who are sending an uncertain sound on these issues. It's just not only an embarrassment, it's a moral tragedy that there are those in the Christian church heading denominations that have been historically tied to the Christian faith, heading institutions that claim a Christian identity, pastors of churches where they at least, stand behind a pulpit, and yet they are unclear about where the Bible is so clear about the Creator's intention for us, God's intention for us, in making us in His image, and thus every single human life being sacred at every single point of development, regardless of disability or ability. It really gets to the fact that we understand what marriage is, not because we just, trace its evolution as a social institution, but because we believe that it is our Creator who's given us this for our good, for human flourishing. And thus to compromise marriage, to destroy marriage, to subvert marriage, is to subvert humanity. And of course, the glory of God. And then we believe religious liberty. And that's tied again to the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God. I love the courage in this statement. I have to tell you, I find it bracing, and I find it very affirming. Because we honor justice and the common good, we will not comply with any edict that purports to compel our institutions to participate in abortions, embryo-destructive research, assisted suicide, and euthanasia, or any other anti-life act. Nor will we bend to any rule purporting to force us to bless immoral sexual partnerships, treat them as marriages or the equivalent, or refrain from proclaiming the truth as we know it about morality and immorality and marriage and the family. We will truly, that is, we will fully and ungrudgingly render to Caesar what is Caesar's, but under no circumstances will we render to Caesar what is God's. End quote. I think that is not only beautiful and eloquent, but dramatically important. And that's why I put my name on this. And I'll be very clear about what that means for me. It means that if need be, I'll go to jail rather than do any of the things we say in this statement we will not do. We'll suffer any injury that a secular culture may try to bring about with the complicity of religious liberals and others who will try to give them a cover to do it. We simply will not allow that to take place. We will not bend the knee. And I think the reference there to bending the knee to Caesar is exactly right. We'll render under Caesar what is Caesar's, but not for a moment can we render under Caesar what is God's. Matt wrote in, lots of good stuff coming in by social media and email. He says, reading the Manhattan document, he applauds all that is said. His question is, how active in politics should an individual Christian or a church be? Well, that's a bigger issue than can be answered here. And active enough to recognize we have a witness, but not so active as to believe that that's the main responsibility of the church or the Christian. The first issue is always the gospel, Matt. But, one of the reasons I signed this document is that it doesn't offer a political platform or an agenda or an action statement. Those words I just read, they really do summarize why I signed this statement. Because it states most emphatically and clearly what we will not do, not what we will do. That's implied by standing for all these things and fulfilling our ministry. It says very clearly, I think bravely, indeed I say historically, what we will not do, and that is bend the knee to Caesar. We'll be back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Well, we started a conversation today about the Manhattan Declaration. I'm sure that conversation will continue. I'm looking at my email and social media. I got all kinds of good stuff coming in. This will lead to some good conversation, and so it should. A lot of these issues are not easy to figure out in this fallen world. How exactly do we deal with these things? When you look at a document like this, do we sign it or do we not? There are a lot of folks who are looking at it right now saying, I'm not sure whether I should or not. And it's not because they disagree with us on the issue. It's just that they're not sure exactly how to negotiate some of these things in terms of the integrity of faith and confession. That's very important, and that's why this conversation needs to continue. I would encourage you to look at the document. It's found at the website at manhattandeclaration.org, and we will continue this conversation in days ahead. Lots of folks are trying to figure out in this fallen world with all kinds of issues being thrown at us what it is that is right to do. Meeting just a few months ago, a group known as Lutheran Core, C-O-R-E, decided that it would wait a year and try prayerfully to consider whether or not it would withdraw from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. That's the mainline Protestant liberal Lutheran group that just in August voted to go ahead and allow openly homosexual clergy and allow for the option of churches to bless homosexual unions. Now, because of the sense of urgency, I think a very similar sense of urgency to that that is reflected in the Manhattan Declaration, this group has decided it can't wait a year. On Wednesday, that's just 2 days ago, an 11-member steering committee of Lutheran Core, the Coalition for Renewal, meeting in New Brighton, Minnesota, said it cannot remain inside the 4.7 million member ELCA after the denomination agreed at its August churchwide assembly in Minneapolis to ordain partnered gay clergy. That decision, said these conservative Lutherans, created, quote, a biblical and theological crisis throughout the ELCA and conflict in local congregations. Thus, they said, it didn't take a year to figure that out. We're not leaving the ELCA. The ELCA has left us, said Ryan Schwartz, a member of the steering committee from the Lutheran Church of the Redeemer in McLean, Virginia. A lot of people who are planning to leave are telling us we need you to form a new body that is like a traditional church body. You know, folks, that gets down to the bottom line issue. Is a church that accepts same-sex marriage still a church? I believe that it is not, because I believe that it has abandoned the gospel on its way to abandoning marriage. Now, that's another interesting statement that I'm sure could lead to good discussion. So stay tuned. We'll take that one up in a very soon-to-come broadcast of the Albert Miller Program. Is abandoning marriage abandoning the gospel when it comes to that kind of theological liberalism and accommodationism? Go look at the Manhattan Declaration. You'll find it at manhattandeclaration.org. And go to albertmiller.com. You'll find lots of resources. And I'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation, broadcasting next week live from Tampa, Florida. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmiller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.